afternoon. This is Michelle Steinberg, counterintelligence desk officer for Executive Intelligence Review. I'm your host today on our weekly webcast, The LaRouche Show, and our guest is going to be Ed Spanas, editorial board member and law editor for EIR. Before we get to Ed, let me tell you the title of today's show: Homeland Security or General Welfare. As we go into this weekend, we have two things going on. The FBI has issued an alert. We don't know based on what, if it's disinformation or real information, but an alert warning that some of America's hospitals may be targeted for terrorist attack. At the same time, we know for a fact that America's hospitals are targeted, because as business closed on Friday, a company you may not never have heard of, called National Century Financial Enterprises, was about to prepare for filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This involves billions of dollars. This is healthcare's Enron scandal. Have you heard about it? As President Bush was warning that the hospitals were in danger, or the FBI was warning that hospitals were in danger, the collapse of this one company, which is a financial scam that Ed Spanas will describe later, this company is cutting off a minimum of 3.5 million patients in America. That's more than 1% of the population. A healthcare Enron. Do you know if your hospital is going to close down next week? Is the emergency room going to close down tomorrow, as Southeast Washington's hospital did this week? Is the nursing home where your loved ones may be cared for, is that going to go out of business? This isn't what we call homeland security. This is a disaster. It's an economic disaster. Lyndon LaRouche has called it the biggest financial breakdown in your lifetime in this century, far, far bigger than the Great Depression of the 1930s. These are some of the questions today. I'll be taking questions on the area of the war in Iraq, Lyndon LaRouche's battle against Senator Joe Lieberman, the Chicken Hawks, and the other warmongers. Ed will be answering questions, if you have them, on Attorney General John Ashcroft and his role in the police state operations, and most importantly, the question you need to answer: is your clergyman or congressman a Mooney sex cultist? Let me tell you what that's all about. This week, Lyndon LaRouche's presidential campaign, LaRouche in 2004, issued a leaflet which pictures Reverend Sun Young Moon, a convicted and well-known sex pervert, embracing Reverend Jerry Falwell in a very warm embrace. Reverend Moon, believe it or not, who says he is the Messiah, he is the Son of God, not Jesus Christ, or he's the real Son of God to deliver mankind, is embracing Christian fundamentalist evangelist Jerry Falwell. Does Jerry Falwell's followers know what's going on with the Moon connection? Lyndon LaRouche, the leading qualified candidate for the 2004 Democratic Party presidential nomination, has a few very important questions for you. Is your priest, your minister, your imam, or your rabbi a Mooney? Is your U.S. congressman or senator a Mooney? Do you know the answer? Your future and the future of this entire nation may rest on the answer to those questions and what you choose to do about it if the answer to any of them is yes. Among the most well-known senators and congressmen who have been bought off by Moon's dirty money, Senator Joe Lieberman from Connecticut, a Democrat, Senator John McCain, the organized crime-connected Republican from Arizona, Senator Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania, a leading conservative right to life individual, a Mooney, a big backer of the Moonies. Representative Dan Burton, Republican of Indiana, who I would say should be checked by a psychiatrist to see if he's a certifiable madman. And then Senator John Ashcroft himself. Lyndon LaRouche has launched a campaign to get 500,000 copies of this leaflet out in the next week. Already members of the Revolutionary Youth Movement have distributed, flooded the United States Congress with this, and actually caught some of the congressmen in the act. They are Moonies. They don't see anything wrong with it. We'll discuss what is wrong with it in detail. I'd like to invite listeners now to get your questions to us at about 3:20. We'll take phone calls on our toll-free number, 1-866-857-4327. We can take emails at any time. Send an email with a question to radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. LaRouchePub.com. You're listening to The LaRouche Show for Saturday, November 16th, and I'd like to now welcome Ed Spanas and have him give us a rundown on the collapse of potentially 100 hospitals, nursing homes, and HMOs across the country. Go ahead, Ed.
Thank you, Michelle. Many of you will remember last year, a year ago, a year and a half ago, the fight that we were involved in around D.C. General Hospital in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, and what was the only public hospital. In the course of that, we learned, as did even a member of the D.C. City Council, that the company that the healthcare system was being turned over to had a long record of being sued and investigated for fraud and racketeering, and we ran up against really a brick wall on that. And we even took it to the city council, opposed the takeover and the privatization, but it was rammed through by the Financial Control Board, an instrument of Wall Street. And then we took the issue to Congress, because Congress is responsible for the nation's capital, and they have every right and duty and moral obligation, in fact, to override what the control board had done. And under Eleanor Holmes Norton's influence, Daschle initially supported it, then withdrew his support for the campaign to save D.C. General, and the whole thing was allowed to collapse. What has happened over the past few weeks is that we're now getting a much better idea of what we were actually up against at that point. And this has two important aspects to it. One is the threat to healthcare across and hospitals across the country, which is why I really had to chuckle when the FBI put out a warning about the terrorist threat to hospitals. The biggest threat is Wall Street and this looting operation. But at this point, because of the collapse of the entire financial system, this is also a major threat to the financial system itself globally. What we are dealing with here, and this we really didn't know last year because it was such a secret operation, but now because of the collapse, the knives are sort of out. And it turns out that J.P. Morgan is the bank that runs this operation, this National Century Financial Enterprises. We're talking about Doctors Community Healthcare, which is they own a number of hospitals, and they took over the privatized health system in D.C. But they're backed up with, and we knew at the time, this thing called National Century Financial Enterprises, which is the financial arm of this thing. But it sort of stopped there because it was such a secret operation and nobody would say anything about it. And all the Financial Control Board, when it was demanded that they disclose what they knew, say, well, Wall Street has full confidence in these people. You know, Wall Street vouches for them. Well, it turns out that J.P. Morgan, as the New York Times says this morning, J.P. Morgan actually runs the board of directors of this outfit. The biggest bondholder operation It's a bulk of the bonds that are floated through this thing are owned by the investment bond branch of Allianz AG, which is the one of the biggest European insurance companies, the biggest in Germany, and the biggest bond investment fund in the world are the biggest holder of the bonds that are floated from this operation. So what this is, it was a way of looking at the healthcare system, which was being privatized and deregulated, and the bankers looking at this and saying, how can we steal? How can we loot this? How can we tap this income flow? And they figured out a way, just sort of creative financing, the same type of thing that Enron and these other companies were doing in the energy field, how they could loot hospitals, nursing homes, the healthcare field. And that's what they've been doing with this thing. They've been doing it through an instrument called asset-backed securities, where they take the receivables, where the claims any hospital has, insurance payments coming into it, they have Medicaid, Medicare coming into it from the federal government. But these people are slow payers, and especially the HMOs are slow payers. So the hospitals sell these receivables to National Century. It's like a factoring operation that we used to talk about, that Lynn LaRouche taught us about 35 years ago in the Garment Center, where you get a factor who's basically a loan shark. These loan sharks take these receivables, bundle them up, and sell them as securities on Wall Street to these major banks. And so they've tapped into and found out a way to steal from the healthcare system. And now they're on the verge of bankruptcy. National Century is expected to go bankrupt early this week. New York Times today says probably on Monday they will. And as a result of this, they're setting off a chain of bankruptcies of hospitals, companies that provide doctors to emergency rooms, companies that provide nurses. This is all a result of this crazy privatization, right? That the doctors, the hospitals don't even hire that many of their own doctors and nurses anymore. They contract out for them. And so Wall Street figured out a way to loot from this stuff. And that's what's happened, and that's now coming to the end of the line, and now it's collapsing.
Well, from what I've read that you've written for EIR and a press release that came out this week from Lyndon LaRouche, was it, or was it in EIR?
EIR put it out as what we had said.
Right.
But Lynn said today when I was briefing him, I said it was just vindication, vindication, vindication. Words of everything we said at the time.
But the focus is the U.S. Congress, because we ask them to do some very specific things. In fact, let's backtrack for our listeners to January 2001. Scalia has declared no more counting votes. George Bush is the president of the United States. He will be inaugurated. And Bush began to front load his cabinet appointments. And we actually organized, the LaRouche movement organized, what could have been a filibuster to stop John Ashcroft, which would have been a significant point. Secondly, Lyndon LaRouche was asked by leading Democrats in the Washington area to do something about the fact that the largest public hospital, the only public hospital that would serve the indigent, the very poor, the uninsured, was going to be shut down. So I understand that the way this doctor's community health care operates, before they begin the looting, or part of the looting, is they go in and they get a contract to manage or own a facility. And the first thing they do is close it down and say, this is too much overhead. Instead of having two hospitals or three hospitals in this area, we will have one hospital. And instead of having to go 5 miles or 1 mile to an emergency room, you might have to go across town, the equivalent of 10 or 20 miles getting through city traffic and so forth. And then the fun begins, including the fact that they then take these receipts, put them onto the financial market, and there's now $500 million missing. What should Congress have done, and who covered it up?
Well, if Congress had taken one serious look at the situation around DC General, they would have come across this DCHC operation, right? Because we were hammering away on that thing. Councilmember Catania was hammering away on this thing. And had they looked at this thing a year and a half ago, this scam would have been exposed, right? I mean, we, as part of that campaign, you'll recall, we hit very hard on the HMOs, that this whole HMO system was insane, it's corrupt, it's been in effect for now, you know, close to 30 years. LaRouche stressed that we have to go back to a Hill-Burton approach, where you start with the physical facilities, and you take care of people. And you sort out the insurance payments and this stuff later on. But the first priority is to take care of people. What the HMO system created and what now exists, and it sort of culminated in this DCHC National Century scam, is that the healthcare system is viewed as a looting operation with one more income stream that Wall Street can loot. And that's what we were up against in this fight. But if Congress had looked at this thing at all in any serious manner, this would have been exposed to the light of day, and a lot of the tragedy, which is likely to take place over the next couple of weeks, with the shutting down, you know, doctors, nurses not being paid, not going to work, hospitals, nursing homes, providers being shut down, and so forth. As you mentioned, Greater Southeast, the replacement hospital for DC General, shut down its emergency room on Wednesday night because they didn't have nurses for it, because they couldn't pay them. Congress could have stopped this a year and a half ago if they had, you know, taken up their moral responsibility and not listened to Eleanor Holmes Norton, right, and the DLC gang on this thing.
This scandal, this scam, comes on top of an already disastrous infrastructure problem in the United States. Mr. LaRouche has issued a emergency program, and he's also talked about a super TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, and has called for hearings. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's going or what that perspective is at this point?
Right. Well, what Lynn said right after the elections, and the which represented, you know, a major defeat for Lieberman and the DLC crowd, and nobody addressing the economy, is that what we have to fight for now, and particularly looking at the states who are being devastated. I mean, every state in the country is being devastated by a budget crisis. I mean, California is probably in the forefront of this with, what, about a $25 billion deficit. New York City, a city alone, is looking at about a $6 billion deficit. Virginia, I mean, every state around the country. Because the revenues have fallen, the economy is collapsing, they can't pay their bills, and they're cutting. So what Lynn said was no, this is not the way to go. What he called the super TVA, which is to have the, it has to be done by the federal government, right? So the starting point is that the federal government should issue long-term credits through the states, which can be used for energy projects, right? Water projects, infrastructure, transportation. You know, and Len stressed, we're not talking about an overnight recovery of the economy. This economy has been, it's been a generation that the economy has been taken down and destroyed, going back to the 1960s, 1970s period, and it's going to take a generation to rebuild it. So the perspective on the super TVA is to issue long-term credits, 30-year credits, low interest, through the states, and the states to sponsor the types of projects for rail, other transportation, energy generation, energy distribution, water projects, which is closely related both to energy and to agriculture, those types of things, which are the underpinnings to rebuild the economy. And that nothing short of that is going to bring us any talk of economic recovery, any talk of trying to solve a state budget crisis on a state level is nonsense. It won't work. The only thing which will work is the type of approach which LaRouche has outlined and what he's called the super TVA.
I'd like to welcome the people from the LaRouche movement who are on today, participating on the Organizers Weekly conference call, and we'll be going to them in a few minutes to see if they have any questions. But I know the first question right off is, what can an individual person do to help bring about this change?
The first thing most people have to do
is to look inside themselves, right, and ask, why have I and my neighbors tolerated this situation, right? Why have we tolerated for a generation or more the destruction of this economy, the destruction of our culture, the destruction of everything else? And then, having looked within oneself and to see why have we allowed this to happen? I mean, you can't start by blaming the politicians, right? Or some populist thing. It's Wall Street, it's the banks, it's this and that. If people allow this to happen, you know, you get, as many people have said, you get the government you deserve. So you people have to start there. Then, having looked at that and sort of looked at one's own assumptions and axioms, then you have to organize politically. And right now, I mean, what Lynn has been stressing is on a state level that many of these projects and things under Super TVA will need to be done on a state level. The first immediate focus would be hearings in state legislatures on the Super TVA on these projects. So that's the type of thing people should be organizing.
Let's shift gears a little bit. We need hearings on the economy. But they've got to be a little bit different than the hearings that we had on the Iraq war. In the last 24 hours, I guess you and I and our intelligence staff have been following the developments, which were pretty bloody. In Israel-Palestine, there was a ambush, a firefight, where 12 Israelis were killed, most of them soldiers. Most of them came from a very radical right-wing terrorist settler installation that's right plopped in the middle of the Palestinian lands. And this comes at the very point that Ariel Sharon and Netanyahu are fighting it out over the who's going to be the boss of the party. Netanyahu says he's going to expel Yasser Arafat, which is a euphemism for knocking him off, among other things. So that situation is hot. The second thing is, it seems like the closer we get to the weapons inspectors being permitted by the United States, who's the one who's been holding it up. Iraq has agreed to weapons inspections. The closer we get to that, the more violence is coming from the Anglo-American cabal. Yesterday, there was an incident where U.S. and or British airplanes knocked out some Iraqi installations, and the Chicken Hawks, the war party, are now claiming the whole deal is off, forget the resolution, this is a material breach, etc. Lynn had a very interesting analysis on that. Can you tell us what he was saying this morning?
Well, let's back up a minute and remember how we sort of got into this current situation, which I think if we go back to September 11th and LaRouche's webcast at the time, he talked about sort of three obstacles that had to be overcome, right, to deal with this Iraq, so to prevent war. One was the question of Bush, right, in the U.S. coming to accept some sort of UN inspection regime and getting off the war track. Secondly would be Saddam Hussein, Iraq accepting it. And then the third wild card would be Israel, which could blow up in this situation. What has happened, and with the UN resolution and then Iraq's acceptance of the inspectors in the UN resolution, we have moved much closer or further along the path of war prevention. And Lynn has also stressed that the post-election period now is entirely different than the pre-election period. It's a different situation now. You're not, the administration is operating on different sort of axioms right now. But it's still very dangerous. The Israeli situation can blow up, and you've got the Chicken Hawks. And as he said, with Iraq's acceptance of the UN resolution, this moves things along, changes things, there's a much greater chance of preventing war. But as he put it, the Chicken Hawks aren't going to take it flying down, right, which they haven't done. We saw yesterday, you know, a whole slew.
A flock of Chicken Hawks.
A cage full of these. They should be in cages, of these guys all coming out.
saying this is a hoax, we can't have the inspections, Saddam Hussein's going to hide everything, first pretext you have, we should start bombing. And this situation overnight when the no-fly zone was exactly that type of thing, where even before the inspectors get on the ground, which is over the next couple of days, Hans Blix will be arriving there, you've got attempted provocations from the British and the U.S. in these no-fly zones, which are not even UN-authorized in the first place. There's no legal basis for these things even. So what Lynn actually compared this to this morning was what Dulles did, right, in 1960 with the U-2 flights, right, which was on the eve of the summit of the Russian-U.S., Soviet-U.S. summit at the time, Paris summit, I believe it was, when an order, and because President Eisenhower was, I mean, he was actually trying to establish a basis for peace, right, and getting out of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. And Eisenhower, being a military man who had seen war, was very serious about this. To sabotage this, over Ike's objections, Dulles sent this U-2 flight over the Soviet Union, which was either sabotaged or was most likely was sabotaged, so that it was then it wasn't exactly shot down, but it was fired upon, crashed, and this blew the whole thing up. Right? And so what LaRouche was saying this morning is that what's happened in these incidents in the no-fly zone is very similar to that, right? To try and create a provocation to prevent the inspectors from even getting in there on the ground, because from the Chicken Hawk standpoint, they're complaining, we've got a short window, we've got to move very quickly, we've got to move within a month or two, or it gets too hot to have a war.
Okay, we're going to take a break now. You are listening to The LaRouche Show. I'm Michelle Steinberg, the Counterintelligence Desk Editor for Executive Intelligence Review. Today's guest is Ed Spanas from EIR's editorial board, telling us about the looting operation to shut down or threaten major hospitals and nursing homes across the United States. The LaRouche Show is live on the web every Saturday from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live from the United States, you can reach us at 1-866-857-4327. International callers can reach us at 703-443-8419. The LaRouche Show's guests generally come from Executive Intelligence Review. That's the weekly magazine published 50 times a year, founded by Lyndon LaRouche. EIR covers every week economics, international news, national news, and feature stories, and gives you the news that you need to survive as a citizen and a member of the human race that can guarantee your leaders bring us peace, not World War III, as the Chicken Hawks are talking about. When we're not on the air, you can reach us every day at 1-888-EIR-3258. That's a toll-free number, 1-888-EIR-3258. Okay, Ed and I were discussing the Iraq War, the fact that we have gotten to a point where peace could be possible. Hans Blix, the head of the UN Weapons Inspections, is scheduled to return to Iraq on Monday, right, November 18th, less than 48 hours from now. But in the meantime, the United States began overflights and claimed that in self-defense, they had to bomb various Iraqi installations, and now may move if the warmongers have their way. They may move to try and stop the inspectors from getting to Iraq. The reason? Some of the real right-wing warmongers who are allied with the worst Israeli faction have said it very clearly. The inspection regime is a quagmire. We don't want inspections. We don't want disarmament. We want regime change. Lyndon LaRouche compared this to the famous U-2 incident, where the Soviet Union shot down a U.S. spy plane, and this was done by Allen Dulles to sabotage John F. Kennedy's meeting with Premier Khrushchev and to extend the Cold War. Those are the times that we're living in, and I'd like now to go to Frank from Los Angeles on the conference line. Frank, go ahead.
Hi. This might be a little complicated. I'm a long-term dialysis patient, and I'd like to know if you can, if you know anything about what's really going on, who's behind it all, and how it can be changed. Why hasn't it been changed in about 25, 30 years? They're keeping us on kind of a third-world standard health-wise. They're keeping us anemic and uremic, giving us really low, you know, low-grade treatment, minimal treatment. There's a very high death rate. There's a scandal with the Amgen drug EPO for anemia. They will not bring our blood count up to normal so we can feel fine. They keep it low so we can, you know, feel bad all the time. And there's a number of players there. There's dialysis corporations, there's Amgen, there's Medicare, and this whole thing was set up by Grace. And one of his compadres was this guy Otto Ambrose from Auschwitz, and the clinics are set up along the lines of Auschwitz. So I don't know if it's just a money thing or some kind of mind control thing or what. Or, you know, do you have any information on that?
Frank, I don't have anything specific on those companies and your particular situation, but what you're saying rings a bell across the spectrum of healthcare. And let me put it this way. Anybody with a chronic condition, a long-term condition, is finding tremendous frustration because where is the drive, shall we say, to find cures? Not just to, you know, make, you know, the quality of life tolerable, but the spirit of adventure and agape, love of humanity, to save the human race through research, through science. And I think that is what we're up against in terms of who really controls it. Ed probably has a little more to say from the standpoint of this scandal that has just erupted on how the payments work and how these Medicare cuts. But let's look at something right now in terms of the political aspect of this and the financial collapse. Right now, the conservative revolutionaries and the neoconservatives are trying to essentially cut Medicare and Medicaid and even Social Security, saying, no, 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 we don't want to hurt you. We want to help you. We want to give you better care. We want you to make more money on your retirement by allowing you to put that money in the stock market. God help us if George Bush had his way in February 2001 and done that. So the idea is because of this toleration of privatization and this philosophy of each against all, the perspective of the kind of idea as John Kennedy's Moon program, not Reverend Moon's program, but the real Apollo program, to master the universe for the good of mankind, this has gone out the window. And as I said, I think probably Ed can say a little bit more about the overall state of health research and so forth.
Well, the biggest problem goes back to this, the shift that we made with the beginning of the HMO system, and turning, destroying public health in this country, and turning it into a profit center, politely put, or more accurately put,
right,
a looting center. In other words, everything that's now done in healthcare, and often, you know, despite the fact that you have a lot of dedicated people working in that sector,
everything is done from the standpoint of how do you make a profit, how do you loot, how do you steal, and how do you squeeze as much out. So you when if you can't make money off of a treatment or a drug or something of that sort, or he reaches a point where you can't, you cut it out. So human life is not what's important on this thing. Stealing and looting becomes what is important. And that's what we have to get away from. And that's why we have to go back to the idea of a Hill-Burton system, where you start with providing adequate physical facilities. You make sure you have the training of doctors, nurses, R&D, the types of things that go into this. And you start from the standpoint that the purpose of the health system is to make and keep people healthy and keep them alive as long as possible, not something that you steal from. And that's where we've gone wrong, and that's what we have to get back to.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that. What I'm talking about, I think Mr. LaRouche says it so well when he attended and taught at a Revolutionary Youth Movement cadre school. He said, he was talking about political leadership, and he said, you have a moral existence, but that, you have a mortal existence, but that mortal existence must have an immortal identity. It must be something that's meaningful to society after you're dead. What you have done must be meaningful for society after you're dead, whether in terms of for a few people or the society as a whole. In a president or another leader of society, you want a higher standard. The individual who is capable of being consciously dedicated to the future of that nation, the world, and humanity. That's what motivates a scientist. A scientist who's any good doesn't work for money. They may demand money, but that's not what makes them a scientist. They're a scientist because they can't help being a scientist. Their sense of identity requires that they be involved in discoveries. If it takes decades, as in the case of Pasteur and many others, decades to realize the discovery on which they had been working. Their identity is located in what they contribute of permanent value to humanity, or implicitly permanent. It's going to help posterity. And I think the doctors are going through a meat grinder. This kind of sense of discovery taking decades for the good, not because it's got a immediate cash or profit value. This is not permitted under the financial system it is today. Ed, can you continue on where we were before in terms of the intelligence warfare side of this? Who was Alan Dulles working for? Who are these chicken hawks answering to?
Well, you could say they're answering to the moon right now, or braying at the moon. This is our biggest problem right now, on the ground on this thing, is the moon operation. Because that intersects, I mean, you talk about Alan Dulles, right, who was a creature of British Anglo-American intelligence, but heavily on the British side. And looking at this moon operation and what we've been reviewing, is that this thing comes out of the H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell, British operation, this fascist moral rearmament in the 30s, which was something, again, cooked up in Britain. And you've got this faction, always, I mean, what Linus has described accurately as the American Tory faction, right, throughout our history. And today, you know, one of the most prominent and ugly manifestations of this stuff is the moon operation. This chicken hawk operation today, the crowd that was desperate to have the clash of civilization, people themselves that would never, you know, think of putting on a uniform or fighting themselves, but are perfectly willing to send other people's sons and daughters into war so that they can have their clash of civilizations. Right? So you're dealing with something that it's not just that they're warmongers, right, but ultimately what these people want. And you go back to what this moon operation comes down to ultimately is a world government, right, Anglo-American world government type of operation, where it's basically the U.S. and Britain against the rest of the world. And most prominently right now, of course, is the Islamic world. That's going to be the enemy. In the Cold War, it was the communists. Now it's Muslims, right? And they want a state of permanent war, which is the way you accomplish the destruction of national sovereignty and a one-world operation. And that's what these people want. One world or one moon, I guess.
Today, Mr. Lyndon LaRouche issued a memorandum to his staff at Executive Intelligence Review. It's called Why We Must Land on the Moon. And LaRouche says, the following is suitable for reading aloud by honest priests and pastors in churches. There can be no hesitation on the matter of defeating the moon cult now. Once Larry Hecht's paper is completed, and listeners, Larry Hecht was our guest last week on the LaRouche show, in which he went through the history of the moon cult, moral rearmament, its links to the Nazis of World War II in Japan, Germany, Korea, the terrorist Gladio operation, and he's writing that up for an upcoming issue of EIR. Once Larry Hecht's paper is completed, all of the essential facts proving the case are in. The facts are such that only by landing full force on the moon cult's continuing role as the keystone ultra-Gnostic element of the post-war international fascist movement is there a possibility of saving the world from a plunge into a new dark age. Mr. LaRouche recommends that for those who often say, particularly increasingly, pastors of Christian churches and an increasing number of U.S. politicians designated as of African descent are saying, we need that sex peddler Moon's money. We don't like his politics. We're just going to take the money because we need it to do good. LaRouche says, read a famous story by Stephen Vincent Benet, The Devil and Daniel Webster. Compare the Mooney approach to the prospective Judases of the pulpit with the role of Benet's Satan, who he called Mr. Scratch. Compare I Come Up with the Scratch, that is Moon's pitches to the corruptible, with the curious dogma of the elect as spread by the Neo-Manichaean Cathar cult, as the latter is mimicked by Kanay, the physiocrat, and with the pitch of the original incarnation of Elmer Gantry, Jonathan Edwards. That's a real good book to get the idea about. We'll be telling you more about what Moon controls because it affects you more than you know. We have a question here from Art in Monterey. I don't know if that's Monterey, Mexico or Monterey, California, but Art, can you go ahead?
Yeah, it's Monterey, California.
Okay.
I wonder, Ed, could you run through how the new TVA would be funded, like through... Give us some of the nuts and bolts of that, please.
You would set up, through the federal government, something that would operate probably like the Reconstruction Finance Corporation did in the 1930s under the New Deal, which would be an agency which would issue long-term, low-interest credits. And as long as you're issuing those kind of credits for productive projects, infrastructure projects, things of that sort, there's really no limit. It's not inflationary. There's no limit to what you can do on that. The way that LaRouche has specified in talking about the Super TVA is that you would do this through the states. And the states have a lot of projects. And in fact, we're also aware that when you get into the federal government, agencies of the federal government, Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Department of the Interior, there's a lot of projects also that are on the books for infrastructure, for dams, for power generation, all kinds of things that need to be done. So if you start these projects, what do? You're immediately employing, you're issuing the credits, you're employing a lot of people that need employment, and what you would come up against very quickly is a shortage, a labor shortage, right? A shortage of skilled labor, actually. And you'd have to begin training people, on-the-job training, to carry these things out. And then, of course, once you start these projects, these big construction projects, you're going to have all kinds of spin-off effects, which is going to affect the small businesses, medium businesses, supply, a whole chain of supply into this thing in the private sector. So you would, what you would come up against very quickly would be a very nice problem to have, which would be a labor shortage, right? A shortage of capital goods and materials. You'd have to employ more people, gear up production to do that. So you would turn this situation around in the right direction very quickly. As I said before, you're not going to solve it overnight or even in a year or two, because we've been a generation in tearing down and destroying the economy, and it's going to take a generation to rebuild it. But you would turn things around in terms of the direction we're going very, very quickly. And it's only the states can't do this, right, on their own. They simply don't have the resources. They don't have the facilities to generate the credit and so forth. That's the responsibility of Congress, the responsibility of the federal government. But you would have the proper kind of sort of federal-state partnership to carry this thing out.
One of the questions that I get all the time is, can we do it? Are people interested? And some of the confusion, of course, is about this election that just happened, because the neoconservatives, the War Party, are telling President Bush that he has a mandate to launch unilateral war everywhere. But what we're seeing in other places is a bit different. Can you talk a little bit about the election results? And it looks like we dealt a major blow to financier George Soros in Nevada.
Right. There were a lot of losers in this election, and really only one winner, who was Lyndon LaRouche. Right? Soros was a big loser on this. They poured, you know, millions of dollars into this drug legalization referendum in Nevada, and also in, what, Arizona and, what, Ohio was the other state?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Three states, all of which were defeated. And defeated largely because of what we did in these things. And in fact, in Nevada, LaRouche became very much the issue. And then one thing that happened there was we had put this stuff out on Soros, who was financing it. They denied it. Then, and said, oh, that's coming from LaRouche. Then the drug czar, right, John Walters, came in and said effectively the same thing we were saying. In fact, he challenged Soros and these guys to a debate, which they wouldn't do. So that's one big loser. The second big loser was Lieberman and this whole DLC, you know, Me Too Republican crowd. Most of the candidates that Lieberman backed lost. Right? I think 8 out of 11 of the candidates he was backing lost. Of the incumbents in the House, the Democrats lost, again, by towing this DLC sort of swing voter, you know, if you have a choice between a Republican and a Democrat that's trying to act like a Republican, you might as well vote for the real thing, right? Why vote for the ersatz Republican, a DLC Democrat, if you've got a Republican there? At least you know what he is, right? He's not trying to pretend that he's something else. So this was a big defeat for this crowd, right? And what that opens up and creates, if there's a mandate for anybody out of this election, it's a mandate for LaRouche and his policies. It's not a mandate for Bush. Bush didn't win the election. The Republicans didn't win the election. Lieberman and the DLC-dominated Democratic Party lost, right? The Republicans, if you had a Democratic Party worth its salt, the outcome would have been entirely different on this thing. So no one can claim a mandate out of this, except for LaRouche, because of the vindication that this shows for our policies. But the other big problem you have with the election is the turnout, right? The fact that your turnout was less than 40% nationally. A lot of people just don't bother, right, with coming out and voting on these things, because they see that you've basically got a Republican Party, a Democratic Me Too Republican Party, and the type of thing that we're talking about, LaRouche is talking about organizing the Super TVA, then you're going to give people something to vote for. You want to get people involved, give them a reason to be involved. Right? And that's the kind of transformation that has to take place very quickly.
We have only a few minutes left. We'll take another call, if we can, on our toll-free number or on the organizer's conference line. Again, our toll-free number is 1-866-8 857-4327. Staying on the topic of the Democratic Party, and maybe we can get Cyril back on from St. Louis. He had a question, because St. Louis was in the middle of that. Senator Carnahan lost by a very narrow margin, but it's not a big surprise. When push came to shove from on the Iraq vote, Dick Gephardt went to the White House. Tom Daschle wasn't even invited.
Right.
But Gephardt went to the White House to make sure that that insane war resolution to potentially trigger World War III got passed. And such is the disaster in the Democratic Party. Now, the LaRouche movement has a perspective, which we're going to be discussing more on the organizers' conference line. We want to circulate 5,000 to 10,000 copies of the new EIR special report on LaRouche's economic program that includes this the projects that need to be financed by this super TVA. Let's face it, the banks in this country are probably bankrupt because of derivatives losses, stock market losses. They can't provide the credit. The government has got to supply the credit. We need railroads. Our airlines are bankrupt. Amtrak is bankrupt, etc. And to circulate these up to 10,000 copies of this program, every member of Congress, hearings in state legislatures, members of the military who are trying to save this country by talking some sense into the Bush administration against the chicken hawks, they could use this to shift the policy around LaRouche's leadership. So get in touch with your nearest LaRouche movement office. The numbers are in the Executive Intelligence Review, the New Federalist, or on the website www.laRouchePub.com. We do have a question, Ed, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, former industrial city. Can we go to Bill?
Hi there, Bill from Pittsburgh.
Good, you're good and clear. Go ahead.
And we shall reindustrialize, of course. Regarding the Mooney money payoffs, I just wanted to say a little quip here. You make a deal with the devil moon, you get the devil moon.
Right.
That's all I had to say. Thank you.
Good, Bill. But since you asked, let me say a little bit more about how this works. Last week, Larry and I were talking about the fact that there's the list of Mooney front groups is probably 26 pages long, single space. That's 1,000 front groups. But in analyzing this, we were talking to some Washington people who noted that front groups don't have money. They spend money. So within that 1,000 or so names of entities and so forth, there's probably about 10 corporations that make all the dough. This includes a armaments industry. We're looking into the news that Moon's son is majority owner of Thompson Machine Gun Company. There's other interests in South America that may intersect with the Bolivian cocaine colonels, etc. Now, most of the people who work for Moon only get tokens. Christian Barnard, Bernard gold, solid gold watch or something like that, a contribution at the annual fundraiser. Some of the major operatives, like Reverend Jerry Falwell, get megabucks, millions of dollars. And we know of at least $5 million that Falwell got in contributions and bailouts.
Don't forget his Learjet.
And his Learjet came from the dark side of the moon, that is the Likud, in Israel, from literally Prime Minister Begin's Likud government at the very point that Ariel Sharon was carrying out the massacre of Palestinian civilians in Lebanon. We were told this week by a member of the Israeli Ministry of Religion that, quote, Israel needed a lot of friends during that time. Well, I should say it was the biggest massacre of human beings in the post-war period. So they brought Jerry Falwell to Israel to do propaganda for the righteousness of those killings. And Falwell today has an open door to the White House, and he represents a whole nest of Christian Zionists who neither practice the Gospels but are totally fixated on the end times. And believe me, they're doing about as much as anybody can to bring them about, including nuclear war. With that, with the task before us, it is a race for time. It is a battle hour by hour, whether or not these war hawks, the neoconservatives, this alien ideology that is now carrying out a aggressive assassination policy, no trials, no due process. An American citizen was killed in Yemen on November 3rd. He was in a car with alleged Al-Qaeda members. He never went on trial. Charges were never brought against him, and he was killed by a Hellfire missile fired from a U.S. Predator. This is the beginning of a new doctrine. This doctrine can be defeated. It has never been supported by the Congress or the American people. This is at the center of our battle to restore the Democratic Party. We're coming to the end of the show. We'd like to thank Ed Spanish for being here. We can continue to answer questions if you have any. You can write to us at radio.larouchepub.com. We'll send you an email or answer next week. Again, get in touch with us, 1-888-EIR-3258. That's 7 days a week. Someone will get back to you about the leafleting, the Super TVA, and saving this country with a LaRouche FDR economic policy. Thanks for being with us.